All right, welcome back, everybody. We're talking with BJ and Julia Davis about their experience, of course, about their new DVD that documents a lot of this in video and audio format. And it's just horrible to listen about this and what is going on. And of course, the fraud, the charade, or the theater, as we've been saying now, of all of this when it comes to terrorism and everything else. And we're going to get deeper into it now in the second here. I just wanted to ask you guys, obviously, I don't know what your position is, but speaking with you guys, I feel that you both are pretty much up to speed with all the, you know, the false flag attacks and everything else that's going on, obviously. But I wanted to ask both of you when and if so you got involved in this in terms of like 9/11 and everything else, as you're working specifically, you, Julia, as a U.S., you know, Border and Customs Protection agent and everything else, that you're like, somewhere along the line here starts to get your eyes open to the fact that, you know, questioning the, you know, quote unquote terrorism that's happened in the country? Was this after 2004, July 4th, that you opened up to this, or did you have ideas about this at all in the beginning?
In the beginning, I was very much wide-eyed about it and had no idea that other than seeing it in the movies, that there was anything like that happening in our government. Obviously, I knew that there were some bad apples here and there, but I had no idea of the magnitude of it. But after dealing with all of this, it definitely opened our eyes and also made us pay more attention to the, for example, all the cases that the media talks about, the FBI solved this or that terrorism case. But when you start reading the details of it, you find out that it was the FBI that built the bomb that had to do with the case, and there aren't any real cases that are being solved other than, you know, some informant talked somebody into going along. So it definitely makes you see it as a security theater as opposed to really solving any real problems or ferreting out crimes.
And you know, Henrik, too, the one way that they create the divide and conquer mentality is that you have people that call themselves Republicans or Democrats, and it really has nothing to do with either one. It's federal management and government as a whole, because it doesn't matter who's in, and we know that having lived through, you know, the Bush period and now the Obama period, and the retaliation and diminishing of civil rights is now greater than ever before, but it's always been abused, and that since the 9/11 and the Patriot Act and things birthed from there. So it's a concentrated effort, and it's much more sinister than people elect to believe. And as long as it's not happening to you and as an individual, you know, you're preoccupied with the mortgage, watching the Kardashians, and reading the, you know, your iPod. So
the politicians are all having lunch with each other while, you know, silly people argue across imaginary division lines.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
In reality, it's not about right and left. It's about right and wrong. And hopefully more people will wake up to realize that.
Definitely. Very good point. I remember, I think it was last year, 2012, in the New York Times, an author called David Chipler wrote about how many of these terrorist plots are basically hatched by the FBI. We're talking about sting operations and stuff like that. They're basically just trying to drag it out of people. It's almost so much so that they're trying to, they're pushing and nudging along these quote unquote terrorists so much that it's like, it's obvious that if they didn't do it, it would never have happened. The whole infrastructure for the whole, project or whatever you want to call it, the orchestrated event, is completely there because of what they do. But they, you know, they officially, they say that this is in the name of like coaxing out the terrorists or trying to be there as one to do preventative, you know, to try to prevent that these attacks happen. So we help them along until so much that they, actually try to do it themselves. But then we arrest them. But that's pretty much flat out in the open right now. It's not false flag attacks that's being described, you know, right in the open, but it's definitely suggesting it, very close to it. And you'd think if this is in the mainstream press, editorials in the New York Times, there should be more discussion about this, but still there isn't. Isn't that amazing?
It is very amazing, and for that very reason, more and more people are turning away from the mainstream media to the alternative you know, programs where they actually have a chance of hearing the truth. But it's pretty interesting when even in the mainstream, those kinds of things are starting to finally penetrate the border of, you know, what they would want American people and people all over the world to believe.
Henrik, and programs like Red Eyes, I mean, these are the foundational seeds that will expand and grow the truth. And, you know, Julia is a L.A. Examiner for Homeland Security. She's really done some hard-hitting articles on just that, the FBI soliciting and enlisting young Muslims to engage in these activities and set them up. And then from Theater Appearances 101, it looks good to the American public. See, we're spending your tax dollars wisely, and we're preserving the integrity of America. And it's all Theater 101. And
instead of solving crimes, they're creating them when they, you know, encourage these 17-year-old kids in some instances to say they will drive a truck with an imaginary bomb into a building.
Yeah, and then we know as well, of course, that they do. They run the test drills on top of the real thing as it's going live, pretty much. And no one, you know, very few perhaps in involved in the operation are actually aware that it actually really happened for real. And it's very interesting. It's a very, very thought out plan. It's very similar. It follows the same strategy all the time. The question is if any of this would be really happening and actually be real. I wonder if there would truly be a terrorist threat against America if this wasn't, you know, part of the sting operations and the false flag. What do you guys think? Is there such things as real terrorists even out there?
Yes, there definitely is. And unfortunately, America is only creating more of that by us acting as the bully of the world and marching into other countries to tell them what civil rights should or shouldn't be and how they should conduct their operations. And unfortunately, that's only making us more enemies all over the world, when really America needs to look inward and fix constitutional problems here. But yes, there is a real terror threat out there, but it's certainly different than what we're being spoon-fed by the official story.
And Henrik, I think really too, I feel that there's more internal terror that from within generated by the government, because it finances their agendas to diminish the Constitution and their cover-ups. You know, it's like 9/11. We've been doing a lot of investigating and interviewing people, and we actually interviewed a CIA operative, a former CIA operative actually, that helped design the attack on the 9/11 World Trade Center
as a drill.
Yeah.
And on that day, the drill was on, but they, you know, portions of it weren't activated. So, yeah, it's if people would care to believe just other than what they're spoon fed, there is something more there to all of that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Let's continue the story, the chronology here. Maybe we can begin with the very sad story of Matthew Judd, guys. What happened there, and who is this guy?
He was our neighbor who just happened to be at home when the Black Hawk landed by our house, and all these agents in black poured out of it and stormed the house from all directions. So Matthew was at home, and he couldn't believe what was happening. Actually, quite a few of our neighbors, knowing that my husband has been in the film industry for years, they thought that we were filming a movie, just using the land around our house. That's what they thought, because it was too surreal for them to even assume that it was happening in reality. In their statements, they had actually described it as a scene from Rambo. That's what they thought. But Matthew had enough, thought about it to think, hey, why don't I pick up a camera and memorialize what's happening? And when he realized that it was real, he was literally shaking, and on camera you could hear his voice say, oh no, they saw me. And at a certain point during the raid, the agents saw him with a camera standing outside his house and filming them. So he backs into the house, continuing to film through the window. And he was terrified, and he was actually debating whether or not to tell anyone that he had this tape, because the agents saw him, and he was wondering if someone would come to you know, come after him for that. But they, eventually he did come to us and brought us the tape and wrote a sworn statement about everything he witnessed. And one very important aspect of it was that agents had spent over an hour and a half inside our house, not having a search warrant, and carried out numerous boxes full of documents. And a lot of these documents had to do with my report to the FBI, with a compilation of documents about Homeland Security's retaliation. So they were essentially filling up boxes and carrying them out. And that's one of the things that Matthew witnessed and described in his sworn statement. And they lied about it under oath. So he was an important witness because he witnessed them breaking the law, taking things out without a warrant. And then all of a sudden, some weeks went by after he had given us the tape, and we hadn't made that fact known to anybody. We're just, you know, copied it and made sure that we had several copies secured with our attorneys and hadn't told anyone yet that we had it. And all of a sudden, we were told by other neighbors that Matthew was found dead, sitting on his couch, and at the age of 25, there was absolutely no reason for him to die. There was no apparent cause of death, and on a death certificate, it just said that it was a pending investigation, but it was never conclusively determined exactly what happened to him. Hmm. So it's chilling.
What do you guys suspect might have happened?
Well, on the audio, you could hear him in the master footage. You can hear him say, "Oh my God, they saw me," and the framing of the camera was obviously backing up and into his residence.
Without having been there, it's hard, you know, to speculate. But sure, it's definitely something very, very fishy and very possibly related to Homeland Security.
Well, if you think of it, the 23 subjects from SIC countries, they don't know where they are today. And then Matthew Judd's death certificate says pending investigation, and that was 2005. So I would say that something is not right.
Have there been proper investigations, or I don't know what the procedures are on these things, if someone just, you know, declares them dead and that's it, or can someone like try to, you know, work for getting autopsy and try to figure out if something else happened?
Yes, definitely his family would be the ones that would have that power to keep pushing the authorities to investigate. And we went to talk to them in the course of working on a documentary, and they talked to us, but they are terrified. And I think that largely it is their fear that something will be done to them as well if they keep this up, prevented them from pushing the investigation forward. So they are scared and dealing with that kind of an unexplained death. I can't blame them for feeling that way. We would not stop based on that, but yeah, that's how they feel.
Well, let's assume that there was foul play, if we can call it that. It's a nice way of saying it. What do you guys think would be the main reason for what he knew and what he had filmed? Or is there maybe something more to the story that we don't know? He had access to some other material maybe that you guys don't even know about today. What do you think?
Well, I think that if we didn't have the videotape of the whole Black Hawk raid taking place, if we were to just tell somebody that our home was raided with a SWAT team and a Black Hawk helicopter, we would pretty much be left out of any court, out of any proceeding or any media. You know, that's what they would ask. Do you have any proof of that? And without that tape, the government would have what they call plausible deniability, where they would just say, well, what proof do you have that it happened? And so that provided us the tape, which at that point they didn't know we already had. So that may have been an attempt to get rid of that evidence, and coupled with them breaking the law by taking things out of the house without a warrant.
Well, the sneak and peek burglaries under the Patriot Act, and you know, you don't know. We have other people's homes, even Brittany Murphy's home. She complained of it in the Hollywood Reporter. So it's just an application for a free reign of terror.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. What happened, by the way, if, you know, I just want to try to get a little into the story here. They land with a military helicopter, a team of thugs storm out of this. What happens during something like this? Is there any kind of communication when they're, you know, do they like talk with you guys? And when they're done, do they just, you know, all right, bye, see ya, you know, jump in the chopper and go away? What happens? So
well,
bizarre,
What happened was my parents were the only ones that were at home, and they hear this overwhelmingly loud noise of the helicopter, and the whole house is shaking like a humongous earthquake because the helicopter kept circling right over the roof of the house, and to the point where there are actually enormous cracks throughout the foundation because of, you know, such a magnitude with which everything is shaking,
right.
And the
wow.
dirt is being blown into the windows, and it was like a storm. And so my dad ran out outside to find out what was going on, and he sees these people in black pointing assault weapons at the house with a battering ram, trying to beat down the door of the bedroom. And that's you know, really laughable that after over 2 years of surveillance, they couldn't tell which one was the front door, and they were trying to break into the bedroom while the front door was open. And that's what my dad, he told him, what are you doing? When he sees them, they had already broken a big hole through the door of the bedroom, and he said, what are you doing? And instead of responding to him in any way, they rushed him, a whole big group of them, and threw him on a cement with such a force that he broke his finger, handcuffed him, and they also put leg shackles on both of my parents. And they took my dad, and then they dragged him down the steps. Our house has a very tall set of steps leading up to it. They dragged him down the steps away from the house, and it was a desert heat that was 114 degrees or more. And so they sit him in full sun, handcuffed and shackled, and he keeps asking them, what are you doing? What is going on? Mm. And they're laughing at him. And then eventually they started to tell him that your daughter is a domestic terrorist, and that was the only response that they would give him. And they kept him outside the house. In the meantime, on the inside, what happened is when they saw my mom walk outside to put the bird seed in the bird feeders, they assumed that she was me. So they gave a command, the target is here, start the operation. So when they dragged my dad out, they assumed that my mother was me, and that they had her face down on the ground, handcuffed with these laser dots, sights on her forehead. And these two leading agents that were directed by Bonner to do all this, Coffrin Deal, they ran into the house where she was laying down with weapons pointed at her, and they were laughing, saying, how you doing, Julia? And she looked up at them and she said, I'm not Julia, I'm her mother. And that's when the weapons were pointed away from her forehead. But it certainly makes you think, if that was in fact me, what would unfold from that point on?
Yeah. What was it, an accident as you guys were away, or did you know something?
We actually had an interview with journalists, of all things, that they were writing. They wrote a book about Robert Bonner in the past, because he was involved in the Challenger disaster, where he was the bureaucrat that rushed the process forward, even though he was told that they were not ready to proceed, and that brought on multiple deaths of astronauts. So they wrote a book called The Betrayal of the Shuttle, about Bonner's part in it. And they were writing the next book called Unsafe at Any Altitude, where they wanted to, and eventually did, include my case as a part of the book that was talking about Homeland Security and the TSA and the hypocrisy of it all. So we scheduled an interview with them, and that's where we were. We literally left very much, you know, a short time period before the raid started, and it was the abuse of government money that saved us, because all of these 27 agents decided, instead of staying in just a regular hotel or motel overnight nearby, they decided to go into the area of Palm Springs that has a ritzy resort. So they decided to stay there, where rooms run from $500 to $900 a night. So they were all staying there and, you know, having a good time. And it's because of that delay of them getting back to the house to raid it the next morning that we had the chance, you know, and to for us to not be there.
Wow. Yep. Yeah, that's very fortunate, as you say. Otherwise, you guys might not have even been here today. Who knows what would have happened? And, you know, yeah, it's a real scary story. So let's talk about the connection to Brittany Murphy, the actress who died under strange circumstances, I would say, in December 2009. I think the coroner stated that, you know, the primary cause of her death was pneumonia, and then there was, you know, some other factors involved in that, like iron deficiency and stuff like that. But yeah, let's get into the connection to Brittany Murphy here.
Yes, and one of the 54 investigations that the government started against me to try to discredit me by any means whatsoever, what happened is when they forced my supervisor, who supported me, to retire before it was his time to retire, they installed this new supervisor over me, who previously had worked only as a clerk in you know, a different area of the port. So they installed this supervisor, Susan Butwell, to be my new supervisor. And she was very tightly involved with the management's efforts to find some way to discredit me. Her daughter was trying to break into the film industry, and it was by a sheer coincidence that her daughter happened to cross paths with Brittany Murphy at some point when they were auditioning for parts in movies. So this was this woman's only connection to Hollywood, was to say that her daughter knows Brittany Murphy. So she decided to use that against us and made up a lie under oath to say Brittany Murphy had told me that Julia was working on the movie with BJ when she was taking administrative leave from work. And that was a complete fabrication. The government even claimed that I was co-starring in the movie with Burt Reynolds, which was a totally preposterous, and we were able to prove that was a lie. But what they didn't count on is that with BJ being in the industry for over 30 years, he knows everybody, and he was able to go straight to Brittany and ask her, did you say this? And she readily confirmed that she did not say that, and had given us a written statement through her attorneys to confirm that she never said that to Butwell or anyone else with Homeland Security. So right there, their lie was blown out of the water. And Brittany was named as an official witness in our case that was at the time proceeding against the Homeland Security. So you can imagine what would happen if Brittany was to walk through the doors to testify in our case. There would be a lot of media.
That's right.
just for that reason alone, and that would totally undermine their the entire plan of keeping this case under wraps. So to them, it was a big catastrophe. So after Brittany stood up and had called them out on a lie, all of a sudden she noticed that she's being followed. And actually, her and Simon had told about it to the editor-in-chief of the Hollywood Reporter, which is a major publication, as I'm sure you know. And he published it in an article called The Last Days of Brittany Murphy. And he has audio tapes of Brittany and Simon talking to him about being followed by helicopters and about being wiretapped. And in the article, he quoted them saying that helicopters were following them and they were being wiretapped. And he pretty much scoffed at that. And after they had told that to him and, you know, to other people whom they considered to be friends in the industry, people started to talk about them as though they were paranoid or on drugs, because who would believe that someone is being followed by helicopters or being wiretapped? And Brittany didn't want to stay at home. She kept wanting to spend the night at the hotel because, you know, she could sense that something was amiss, that someone has been in her house when they're not there, and it was the sneak and peek incursions. So what happened next was very much a parallel to our case, where with the Black Hawk helicopter, when they raided our home, they were planning to denaturalize and deport me. They had attacked Simon the same way. He was a British citizen, so they arrested him in the middle of the night, dragged him away, had threw him in the immigration prison, and it was ICE people from San Diego branch, exactly the same agency, the same branch that had been attacking me all along. And I guess that was their message to Brittany: look who you are messing with, and look at what we can do. So the parallels were just astonishing, and because of all these rumors swirling about her that she's being paranoid and on drugs, she lost big parts in Happy Feet and Tinkerbell and other movies, because producers were being told that she's crazy, paranoid, and sure. Drugs. Yeah. But she was telling the truth. It's just no one would believe it.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden, Brittany was found dead in her home, and shortly before her death, she was experiencing very strong abdominal pains, and she was vomiting brown fluid. And exactly the same thing happened 5 months later with her husband. He was experiencing sharp abdominal pains with brown liquid coming out of his mouth. And this would definitely, any normal human being would say, well, let's check if there were any poisons or toxins that these people may have been subjected to, especially when these two young people die like this, one several months after another. But there has never been a complete autopsy. As a matter of fact, Brittany's dead, and us together are in the process of getting Brittany's tissues finally released by the coroner and the LAPD to get them tested to find out once and for all what really killed her. Because to say that husband and wife both die of pneumonia and anemia 5 months apart, when both of them had traveled extensively and worked abroad, and we have documents where they have been vaccinated against a multitude of diseases, including pneumonia. So it's just, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It's very suspicious. And, you know, Brittany was a good girl. She spent her time at home with her mother and with her husband. She was not a party girl like the media. It totally smeared her, and they had called her anorexic, but the autopsy report says that she was the perfect weight for her height. So all of these speculations and about mold in the house, it was just absolutely ridiculous rumors that were spread about her. But Brittany had more heart than those over 100 people that were involved in persecuting and chasing us, none of whom even thought to stand up and ask any questions. And you know, she had the bravery and integrity to speak up and point out their lies.
Oh wow, yeah. Hey, BJ, the audio tape of her talking about some of this, her testimony, if you will, did you guys manage to get this for the film, or maybe you guys managed to talk with her in a different setting, film it or something like that?
Well, no, what we did was we have archive footage of Britt. And Julia's writing a book, will be writing a book with her and her father about it. We have her statement that she wrote for us. Alex Ben Block has really been an aiding and abetting Department of Homeland Security throughout.
And that's the editor-in-chief of The Hollywood Reporter. He's sitting on those tapes. We're doing everything we can to get them, because there's a lot of information there in addition to what's published in the article, because they went in great detail to describe the way they're being followed and harassed.
And I think the key factor here is that Robert Bonner was also head of the DEA And then that dispels the fact about Brittany having been a drugger, which she was not.
Oh, and that's another thing, too. In addition to immigration investigations against them, all of a sudden, Brittany and Simon were also being investigated by the DEA, which Bonner, you know, was a former head of. Mm-hmm. So it's just a lot of these things that is very obvious they were targeted.
Well, jeez. And then Bonner's associate, who was U.S. attorney with A. Howard Matz, he was the judge selected to prosecute Julie and I, and then their protege, Deborah Wong Yang, which you'll see in the documentary. She was a protege of both Bonner and Matz, and she initiated the prosecution against us. And as we found out in a FOIA later, that she was also spearheading the prosecution of Brittany and Simon Monjak as well on contrived and false charges.
Yeah, so that's another parallel where they were prosecuting us for alleged immigration marriage fraud. They were preparing a criminal case against Brittany and Simon for immigration marriage fraud. Hmm. All of the same people involved. Wow. So that all of the dots are definitely connecting.
And people here and there seems to be, well, either just voluntarily, you know, cooperating, working, or they're deeper entrenched into it. It's like the little octopus. I'm talking about people in the film industry that are just willing to go along with all this. That's crazy, huh?
Well, it's sad because they take the word instead of asking questions. Brittany was 32 years old. Why wouldn't she have a full forensic autopsy? You know, that's just common sense or practical medical protocol. But as we have investigated this, they cannot give an actual time of death as to what time she actually died. And more importantly, until the coroner, Ed Winters was the deputy coroner at that time, until he knew that we were doing the doc, her death certificate and Simon's death certificate remained pending investigation. Only did they run to put a false label on it, like pneumonia, which, by the way, the symptoms of pneumonia cover or similar to poison.
Yes, there have been cases where arsenic poisoning was mistaken for pneumonia. We had looked up, and there have been plenty of cases like that. But yes, that's a very valid point. Only when we started to make freedom of information requests into the deaths of Brittany and Simon, did the death certificate all of a sudden get amended to include the
right.
cause of death over a year later?
Right, wow. Right. And it defies logic and intellect for someone not to look beyond that. Now we're not saying Homeland Security murdered them, but what we're saying is they certainly influenced a lot of events and a lot of internal and covert terror tactics to distract her from being a witness in Julia's case.
And you know, anyone who you know, may not necessarily want to believe that the deaths were somehow related to the government, even without getting to that point, the kind of harassment and torment that these two people were subjected to just for Brittany telling the truth, that in itself should outrage any conscientious human being.
Well, and Bonner still has his tentacles of influence throughout, but the federal judge resigned, the Deborah Wong Yang resigned, everybody, even Susan Butwell resigned.
Actually, when we had sent a written request to Susan Butwell to be interviewed about the way she dragged Brittany Murphy into our case and to provide an on-camera interview, she submitted her resignation notice the same date, and we have a copy of it. And she had told everyone that she's moving out of state, and she hadn't been seen ever since.
Oh, wow. Unbelievable. So we're looking at a situation here where basically they and Brittany firsthand then gets targeted because of potential media attention that could be brought to this, and later Simon. Maybe he probably is inquiring at this point as well. I'd reckon he wants to find out what really happened and everything else, and so he's kind of dragged into it and consequently also taken out, if you will. What are some of the ideas and theories that you guys have surrounding this about how maybe, I don't know if you guys have thought about this, how this was, you know, done more you know, hands on, so to speak, how they managed to poison these people, if that's what they did.
Well, we would rather not speculate until we have test results, and then at that point that will give us more of an idea as to the real cause of death and what happened. Well, we certainly have our suspicions, but it's really all riding on finding out what killed them.
Let me share this with you, Henrik, and this will be a first. That A.J. Bertolotti, Brittany's father, has entered into a settlement agreement with the LAPD and the L.A. County Coroner that they'll be held harmless once the results of her complete autopsy comes in. So that speaks volumes in itself right there.
Yeah.
And the LAPD closed her case within an hour after she was pronounced dead.
Yes, the homicide division was assigned to her case. They opened the case within an hour. They close it. And then before releasing the hair and tissue samples that they have collected but never tested at all, not one test, LAPD didn't do anything. They wanted to have a deal in place where they were promised to be held harmless, whatever the outcome of the test. And then all of that has been dragged out in a way you wouldn't even want to imagine, with a case... you know, the name of her case, her name being completely misspelled, files getting lost with original signatures on it. There's been one delay after another, yeah. And then the office of an attorney who was handling the case got raided on the day that there was to be a hearing in the case that caused them to get the case thrown out at that point. After that, it's been, you know, resurrected, but... It's stranger than fiction. It literally you couldn't write this for a movie.
And the other interesting point, exclamation point to it, is that Deborah Wong Yang was the LAPD police commissioner during Brittany's death.
And
actively involved previously as a U.S. attorney in the prosecution of her.
And she would definitely be in the position to tell someone, hey, we don't want any media attention on this case. Close it up quickly. Make it go away.
But Brittany did not die of drug overdose. And Alex Ben Block made those legal and medical announcements about her being anemic and pneumonia and all.
And he actually had the audacity to write an article where he mentioned me as well, where he said that he had met with Homeland Security officials who had told him not to believe me and not to write about me. He actually he put that in the Hollywood Reporter. So that is in print and undeniable. He, by his own words, that he had met with Homeland Security and allowed them to influence how he proceeds.
But now, but remember this, the key factor is there. If Julia was not credible, we would have been prosecuted, sent away, or murdered ourselves. And obviously, the Homeland Security wanted to settle it and go away. And it's not going to go away as long as people's constitutional rights are being violated and there are outstanding issues and questions about people being murdered.
Wow. Yeah, this also brings back some memories of that film, the Hollywood and the Pentagon, A Dangerous Liaison. There's a couple of exposés on this as well. There might be people, it seems like, involved in entertainment industry as well, so who at least are, you know, flat out willing to cooperate with whatever is going on that front as well. But he seems more kind of interested in, you know, really, really trying to cover up this effectively and smear you guys as well on top of it.
Well, the media, they want those White House ops, they want the political favor, and, you know they have the market, the mainstream.
And it makes people like Alex Block feel like a 007, and Homeland Security talking to him and asking him for favors, and so it must make him feel really special that he could do something for a great and wonderful government, especially when they call this, you know, a case of a so-called domestic terrorist. So, and then also, one of the articles that I wrote actually had to do with a law firm that's one of the biggest in the world, Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher, and they, I think, are at the center of these connections between mainstream media and the government, the prosecutors, the judges, because this law firm is known for actively... pretty much buying former prosecutors. Deborah Wong Yang was reportedly paid over $1 million or $1.5 million to leave her job as a prosecutor to go work for this law firm, along with Robert Bonner, where she's a partner with him. And so that's the same woman that prosecuted us. And so we have been able to to tie them together to NBC, Paramount, Facebook, and all of these different government agencies. So pretty much they have the power of, you know, if, say, they're representing some government official who is in trouble, they have the power of contacting a prosecutor because they have all these former prosecutors and judges working for them. They know everybody. They can make a phone call and say, hey, leave them alone, or, you know, hit that person harder. And they can also contact the media and tell them, don't touch such and such case.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a really good point. Wow, what a crazy story. God, the cover-ups and then all the people that are involved in it, the money spent on this as well that you pointed out, BJ. More proof of the efficiency and benevolence of government, I guess, and also the people working within it. Now, this is being used to, well, torment people instead of actually, you know, focusing on the real targets that we talked about earlier. It's what a story. Incredible.
Well, thank you. You know, it's really wild because they actually left us open to attack from both sides of the badge with criminal. You know, just it's just, you got to see the doc, I guess. And then, of course, we're working on Whistleblowers, The Untold Stories, a TV series. And, you know, we were going to give people a forum and a voice to have their stories told.
Very yes, good. And I've also I'm working on another project because I found out there is no generalized resource anywhere online about whistleblowers from different countries and different walks of life. So I created the whistleblowerdirectory.com where I am compiling cases of whistleblowers from all over the world, from all walks of life. And so I'm creating an alphabetical listing where people could go and read about different whistleblower cases. And when you read enough of these cases, you start to see a common thread, you start to see a pattern. And I think that's why it's so important, is that people realize those are not isolated cases. This is being done to people all over the world.
Well, that's right. Whistleblowerdirectory.com. I went in there, and of course you have Cybele Edmonds there, right there on the images as well. I thought about her a little bit when, as you know, as another, you know, really powerful whistleblower who has some of the inside knowledge on this. Very good. We're going to have that link up, by the way, on the website, to the website as well, so people can go there. And guys, I wanted to ask you as well here. Then you sued Homeland Security, you said, and there were in total 54 investigations, Julia. Are there any of these that are still ongoing? Are there more to come, as far as you know? I guess I want to find out what's happening right now, and if this is even the surveillance and everything, is this like still ongoing? What's going on?
There's still some remnants of it ongoing, and certainly with the IRS, they're continuing to perpetrate their efforts against us, and you know, making you feel like you're fighting against a brick wall when our every appeal of their false claims that we owe them a certain amount of money that is just ridiculous. All of the appeals, we get back is a letter saying that they have determined that this is wrong and we still owe them the money. And, you know, you never get to actually speak or interface with a real person. And so it's very frustrating, and that is still ongoing. And there is still surveillance. We've actually created a bit of a collection of people with cameras, you know, that drive up along our house and sit there and photograph us, and we're photographing them in the meantime. So yeah. We have been posting those on our Facebook and, you know, collecting them. So that is still going on, and they obviously don't want us to feel at ease, and we would not put it past them if they were still trying to concoct some kind of ongoing investigations against us, because we obviously are not going to be quiet, and we're not going to allow them to get away with that kind of corruption.
Well, they fear the story being told. That's why the resistance to the documentary, because it's obviously frame by frame supported by court documents. There's no allegation or contention in it, and it shows a trifecta of terror that is internal and part of the government operations against true patriots like Julia Davis.
And we actually have the government perpetrators being deposed,
yes,
under oath on video, which is part of the documentary. So when you hear it directly from the horse's mouth,
right,
there is no way to dispute it that yes, they did it, and yes, they feel absolutely no shame about doing it. In fact, they said that this was a good way to spend taxpayers' resources, which is also a documentary.
Yeah, exactly. What would you guys like to see happen at this point, if there's anything that I guess that could resolve any of it in a little bit? I mean, obviously, if the media picks it up, get some nationwide attention, that would help. But maybe there isn't a possibility of that at this point, considering you might be on the the editor's blacklist, if you will, of the, you know, what the central government sends out. Don't touch, you know, this story, basically. What do you guys think?
Yes, and it might involve grassroots efforts and brave programs such as yours to get the word out there. So ideally, people will care enough to look it up and share it, with their friends and other people that care about something more than what the Kardashians are wearing. So ideally, that's what, you know, we're hoping will happen, is that people will help it get around by the word of mouth, and also that at some point in time there will be meaningful legislation to protect current and future whistleblowers from retribution like this.
Indeed, indeed. Give us the website again here so people know where to go to pick up a copy of the DVD, see this for themselves. And also, of course, if there's anything else you guys want to bring up here in closing, if there's any other websites or you know, whatever you have going on next or something like that, please go ahead and let's give all that out right now.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And the website address is topprioritymovie.com. And also they could Google Homeland Security Examiner Julia Davis, and they will get my page where I write articles about all kinds of government corruption and whistleblower cases. And so those are our websites. And
IMDb too. You can look up Julia Davis 2, Roman numeral 2, Julia Davis, Roman numeral 2 at IMDb, and that'll take you to the trailer as well on the IMDb page. And see our cast on there more about the story itself. But we have Whistleblowers, The Untold Stories, and Rogues in Robes about judicial corruption and the demand for accountability and transparency in government.
Excellent. Well, thank you guys so much for your time. This has been a fantastic program, really explosive. My thanks to both of you, and I hope you both stay brave, of course. Keep talking about this and keep spreading the word.
We will.
Thank you so much. Sincerely appreciate you doing the program and asking brilliant questions that were right on point. Really appreciate being on the program. Thank you so much.
Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. How about that? An incredible story. And we want to thank all of you members out there. We appreciate you guys so much for enabling us to bring you these programs and keep on doing this. We hope you have a great rest of your day, and we will talk more soon because we'll be back in just a few days. Bye-bye.